Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
WGR Sports Radio 550 presents.
But for those people who are, you know, champing, by the way, which is...
No, what? Chomping.
It's chomping.
It's champing.
It's chomping.
Sports Talk Saturday.
The other day when I said chomping on the bit of Twitter, I got 20 people. It's champing.
It's the internet. You know you can't trust
it's
that.
It's champing.
On WGR.
Champing.
Sports Radio 550.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to my TED Talk. No, I'm just kidding. It's Sports Talk Saturday. It's Nate Geary here, just clowning around on a Saturday morning. You know, I don't think as a society we do enough clowning around. And I think the most part, the reason that we don't do it is because we don't have large shoes, I found. I have a size 13, so when I have a funny, you could say that most times I'm clowning around with my size 13 shoe. You know, seriously though, one time I bought a pair of, because okay, there was always that, there was an era in all of us millennial lives where the Converse All-Stars, they became a big thing again, right? Like just the regular old school Converse. There was a time between like 16 and 22 where like the Converse really came back, and my dad used to wear them, so I just assumed they weren't very cool, but then they kind of became cool. And then I decided to buy a pair, right? Derek, have you ever seen a size 13 Converse?
No, probably not.
It is ridiculous. I couldn't wear them because they looked so ridiculous.
Did they look like clown shoes?
They looked like clown shoes.
Did they feel like clown shoes? Did you try them on?
I felt like my hair started turning orange when I wore them. That's not true. But they were really large and unfortunate. And KJ Osborne's on ESPN, former UB wide receiver. Anyways. I'm all over the place.
That was a natural transition right there. A-plus stuff.
I do what I do. It's pumpkin spice season.
No, it is apple cider season. Get it right.
I have not made my way over to the cider mill yet, and I will.
You should.
I will.
You need to, like,
but
today.
Having said that, pumpkin spice is still fine.
No.
What's wrong with that?
It's inferior.
I would say it's inferior to apple cider. That's fine.
Then it's apple cider season.
But if you're going to go to some place to get apple cider, you're probably going to get a pumpkin spice muffin or donut.
No, I'm not.
Why not?
Because...
Why wouldn't you add that layer, that extra layer of deliciousness in?
First off, if I'm going to get a donut to complement my apple cider, I'm probably going with one of those caramel donuts or the cream cheese donut. Yes! That reaction
the
right there. You know I'm right.
Caramel on top of the donut. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's,
your reaction told me I'm right.
That's a pretty good donut. That's a good thing you've got going on.
Maybe we should do this for tomorrow.
Ooh. I don't know how we would get that done because
by buying them tonight.
Yeah, but. They're not the same the next day. I mean, they're still good. Don't
they're
get me wrong.
They're still really good,
They're
though.
Still very good the next day.
You have a microwave? You can warm up a donut?
Listen, we're not warming up donuts in microwaves. This is 2019.
You could just eat the donut.
You could
it's
just,
okay.
We will just eat the donut. There will be no heating in the microwave of donuts. Anyways.
Like I said, if you were that worried about it.
So that was my prelude. That was my my rant on popular culture, Converse All-Stars, Cider Mill Donuts.
No, you said pumpkin
KJ
spice.
Osborne really went all around. We went all around. We went around the ringer there. Notre Dame plays today. I know you were interested in it. They're facing off against New Mexico 2:30. John Fuller, UB communications director. He's going to join me at 1:00 because UB plays Liberty today. And if you don't know anything about Liberty, first of all, former UB head coach. Turner Gill was there for the last two or three seasons. He ended up having to step away from football last year, unfortunately, due to an illness with his family and his wife, I believe. So Hugh Freeze has taken over as the Liberty head coach. And if you hadn't watched the first 2 weeks of the year, Hugh was coaching from a hospital bed in the press box. And then week two, he coached from a dental chair in week two. What he'll coach in week three against UB, I'm not sure. But they are 0-2, and UB has a good opportunity to go 2-1. So we'll talk to John Fuller a little bit about that later. We're also going to talk a little with John about the Tim Tebow situation. And if you don't know what I'm referring to, Tim Tebow yesterday on ESPN First Take had some takes. Shocker, right? ESPN First Take got takes. He had some takes, and I definitely have some opinions about it that we'll talk a little bit about in the 1 o'clock hour about whether or not college football, college athletes in general should have an opportunity to be paid. There was a recent law that was passed in the state of California that paves the way for collegiate athletes to make money off of their likeness, which shouldn't be controversial, but it is, and we're there. Either way, we'll have John Fuller on later to talk about. Chad Deanamensis is going to join me here in like a little less than 10 minutes. We're going to talk a little bit about Sabres camp, which opened up this week. An obligatory, we need to talk a little bit about the Sabres since the season started, even though, Derek, how do you feel about the Sabres this year?
Not terrible.
I am so on the fence of caring.
I'm not where you are. I still care.
It's not that I don't care, because I do.
But you're
on
the fence about caring.
I am absolutely on the fence about caring.
I get why people are pretty much indifferent about this team right now. I genuinely believe that Phil Housley was
terrible.
Yes.
Okay.
And a bit of fool's gold, because he was widely seen around the league as a good hire at the time. Sometimes those things just don't work.
That's right.
A hot candidate is a flop. That literally happens everywhere. So I think that just at coaching alone, they might be due for an upgrade. Therefore, not terrible. Therefore, not indifferent about this season. Also, Sabres 50th, the way that they're promoting this whole thing this year, that alone has me caring about the home games this year.
You're caring about the home games this year?
Yeah, the presentation of those Sabres 50th,
yeah.
The way that they're looking like they're presenting those things,
so it's not the actual hockey; it's the
that's going to come with it.
Okay,
I think that it's really more or less. Right now, I'm intrigued by what they're doing promoting it, and then I'm going to watch hockey because that's what I do.
You don't have a choice. Yeah,
I mean, I like hockey. It's a problem. No, it's not. But I really think though that this team will be better because, quite frankly, the last 2 years, can you get any worse? Answer
that was
is
me knocking on wood.
Answer is no.
That was
no,
me knocking on
you
wood.
Can't. Over a 2 year span, I don't think you could really do much worse with the talent that you have on this team.
I hope you're right. And listen, we're going to talk to Chad Deanamensis here in a few moments, and maybe he'll make me feel slightly better about it. But you know, at the moment, I am kind of all in with. You know, and obviously, listen, I'm a football guy first anyways, so I guess this isn't really like a hot take for me to say, but I felt a certain way about the Bills going into this season. After week one, it was definitely a tale of two halves for me. I didn't feel very good about that first half, about how it played out. I got to rewatch the game, and much better about the first half after rewatching the game than I did here. And if people don't really know this, but during Bills game day, like here in the station, it's very difficult to really see everything in a game while we're here. It's hard. We get a couple of small TVs in the newsroom, and last week there was a Spanish station playing and I couldn't even listen to the so I was listening to the radio broadcast, which was 3.5 seconds ahead of the TV broadcast. So every time I was watching something, I already knew. Oh man,
it wasn't
even CBS. I think it was something. The lines were crossed, and that won't be the case this week because it better not be.
Oh, all right then. Strong words from Nathaniel Geary.
Only the TVs that I was watching had the Spanish underneath. This one was fine in here. This one was fine in your room. I was stuck watching the Spanish dub broadcast.
Joe
was in there. And
yes. Yeah, my problem
was your
problem.
Week. But it's very difficult to watch. I can watch enough to have opinions about what happened, but like I don't really.
But I will never forget you looking at me at halftime and saying, they're going to win this game. They're down 6-0 after 4 turnovers.
Yeah.
They're going to win this game.
They had to. They had to win it. And then they got down 16-0, and then I was like, okay, they're not going to win this game. In fact, I'm going to tweet out that they will not win this game. This one's over, folks. That's what I tweeted. Nobody really held me accountable for that, which I appreciate. I think everyone just kind of got caught up in the lust of a 16-point comeback that they forgot to call me out on my hashtag hot takes. 803-0550, 1-888-552-550. The numbers to call if you've got any thoughts. You want to talk Sabres? I'm down to talk Sabres today. If you want to talk Bills, I have plenty of Bills guests. Sal Capaccio will join me at noon. So we will break down the matchup between the Bills and the Giants. Joe Moreno of the Draft Network and Locked On Bills will join me shortly as well at 11:30. Him and I will talk about the Bills' defense going up against the Giants offense. And then at 12:30, Mike Catalana of 13 Wham in Rochester joins me. Mike is a longtime Bills beat reporter. I see him every year at camp, and he recently wrote an article about Josh Allen that he posted out this week. So him and I will talk about the Bills offense. And then, as I mentioned, at 1 o'clock, John Fuller of UB, the University of Buffalo, he'll join me at 1 o'clock, and we're going to talk a little bit about UB football and some of the issues around paying college athletes, considering Tim Tebow's words this week, which Doug Ferrer of the NFL, what does Doug do now? Doug is USA Today. And Doug tweeted out an image of Tim Tebow, because for all the things that Tim Tebow said the other day about how college athletes shouldn't be paid, he did at one point try to trademark the Tebow. So it's not like he is without trying to make money off his likeness. So 803-0551, 888-552-550. Nate Geary here. I got Derek Kramer, who's doing updates and producing the show today. We will have in just a moment here, Chad Dinaminisis he's going to join us to talk and preview. He's on his way to the Nerd Fest, so we'll talk a little bit about him and his hockey Nerd Fest that he's on his way to. But as you know, Chad is from Die by the Blade, and he's the co-host of B2B Hockey. So we will have Chad here in just a moment. He's going to help me preview a little bit about what's been going on at training camp, some of the players that he's really keeping an eye out for during camp, because I don't really have a good feel of who I should be looking out for the next few weeks. Obviously, some of the tweets that we saw coming out this week, and one of the things that I looked at was interesting, was the first line combination and who they've been putting with Jack Eichel and or Casey Mittelstadt. Like, that's kind of the only things that I have going in my head that make me feel, I don't know, better about the season. The idea, though, and the good news about this upcoming Sabre season is they do have top echelon talent. Like, you know, they've got players, and at least I can feel decent about that, but I still don't feel confident, and I don't know what it'll take for me to feel confident. And maybe the gentleman who's now on the Westar hotline has the goods to make me feel confident that Vlad Sobotka is going to have another really good season. So, Chad, talk to me a little bit about your analytics Nerd Fest that you're going to and how that relates to Vlad Sobotka's reawakening of the hockey world.
Well, I don't think
that was a lot. I'm sorry. That was a lot.
It isn't tied to Vlad Sobotka in any way, shape, or form. That was more of a joke. But
I know.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun. You know, RIT at the Sports Analytics Conference, there's been a lot of good presenters already. So I'm just trying to absorb as much of it as I can and not feel like I'm a big dum-dum. So it's fun. There's a lot of good presenters and a lot of good information coming out already.
You know,
earlier in the day.
I'll say this, Chad. The hashtag blogging community's come a long way if you get to go there, huh? I guess all of our elitist radio and big print really sock and mouth right now, buddy. Congrats on I'm just messing with you, but hey, listen, take something away from it, because those types of forums where you get to talk with people that are, listen, I mean, you're really smart and the work that you put out's really good, but like, these are the kind of events that can only make you better, and I wish there were more of these in the football world. And listen, the football world is still a little behind where hockey has gone analytically, but these type of events, man, I mean, so you're going there, and what are you looking to take away from this event, and like, are you going to learn some new analytics to throw in my face, or what?
I mean, that's kind of what the goal is. I mean, the goal really is to come here and kind of absorb as much as I can. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I'll ever get to the point where some of these people already are in their lives and what they can do, what they can put together, and the graphs and the models they can put together mm-hmm. and throw up there. I mean, it's really intricate. It's really impressive. And I mean, like you said, it kind of gives you a full scope of kind of maybe even where the sport of hockey is going. You know, Ryan, who Simpson kind of organizes the whole thing, tweeted out there's at least 7 NHL teams here, and I've awesome. Seen the shirts as I'm walking around. So, I mean, you get that impression. So it's kind of cool to see that and kind of know how important it is and kind of, again, suck up as much as you can and then download over the next few days and see how you can kind of use that going forward.
Yeah, that's awesome. Chad Dinaminis is here on the Wester Hotline. Chad is the managing editor of SB Nation's Die by the Blade. Chad, let's talk about training camp. I know you got the event going on today, but you did have some time to consume some training camp hockey. And I don't really want you to tell me about your thoughts about practice, because we're not really going to take anything from these practices early on. It's the beginning of training camp. It's mostly what did you either do this summer that will show on the ice right now? And if you're behind the eight ball a bit, you know, conditioning-wise, I think those are the kind of things you're probably seeing right at the beginning of camp. But what are you looking for as camp continues to open up and preseason games start to happen and you start to see line combinations and chemistry being built between lines? Like, is there anything at the beginning of this camp that you can take away that you could start to apply in a few weeks once the actual games start coming? And give me some guys that I should be looking for in terms of maybe these fringe roster players that may have taken a step this summer.
Yeah, it's a lot of, for me, you know, at least yesterday when I was there, I was kind of trying to get an idea of kind of where Kruper's headed at. Because really that's kind of one of the great mysteries, is you don't really know a lot about him. I mean, because he hasn't been coaching for a long time in the NHL. So it's kind of where his head's at with the roster is kind of some strategies he's going to focus on. Like yesterday, the absolute focus was on breakouts and zone exits, which is pretty interesting to see that. I mean, that's almost literally what they did the entire practice for both sessions. So it was kind of see on day one, that was already his primary focus. And then you can combine that with the fact that Jason Botterill over the summer acquired defensemen, which their strengths are zone exits and breakouts. So it's kind of, you see that already, that connection happening. So that's one of the things that kind of jumped out at me right away, and it's kind of interesting to kind of put that together. And then I think it's kind of the line combination as well. It's very early, and he even said yesterday there's going to be some mixing and matching here. It's especially hard to get a grasp when the groups are split too. But I mean, the first thing that kind of jumped out to everybody is Jeff Skinner and Jack Eichel were not on a line together. I mean, you immediately mm-hmm. noticed that when they came out for the practice and they were wearing different jerseys, and you're like, wait a minute. So, you know, Sheary and BC were up there like, oh, which is interesting. You know, maybe they're going to get a first try at that. I kind of figured it'd be one of those two, Whisker and Michael, but it looks like, you know, doing those two together is interesting. So we'll kind of see how that goes, how those play out. The defense pairs, I don't think you could take much from that. They kind of rotated through the entire day, so there's not much there. But, you know, there's some players, you know, like Rasmus Asplund, he had a really nice prospect challenge, and I kind of focused on him in group one yesterday. And I think he has that. He's not going to be a guy who's going to score a ton of goals for you, but I think he can do a lot of nice things. He's one of those players who can be a quiet contributing thought on your lineup. He's going to bring some speed, to some nice things defensively. And one thing that stuck out to me yesterday, even in drills, they were doing some kind of short space drills. His acceleration in short spaces is really impressive. So his ability to kind of take the puck and then accelerate to the net, kind of lower his shoulder, or accelerate to create space from away from the defender and kind of set up one of his teammates. That's one of the things that I noticed that's impressive. And Arturo Ristolainen, another guy who had a nice prospect challenge. Again, his speed translated against NHL players I wanted to see. You know, it's one thing to do it against quote-unquote prospects, but to see if that same speed translated against NHL players, and it did. So, you know, those are a few guys that I'm definitely going to follow during camp. You know, Dylan Cousins is there. He didn't stand out a lot to me. I kind of think he's a long shot to make this team or even get a nine-game preview. I think that thumb injury kind of hindered any chance of that. I think it's best let him hang out for camp, let him get a taste, give him a few preseason games, and let him go dominate juniors. But, you know, Ristolainen and Asplund are two guys I'm really going to focus on.
Let's talk about the other Ristolainen, who's still here. And, you know, I'll give him this. His attitude could be a lot different because it has just been one of those off seasons for Rasmus. I mean, he's still a young guy, and you know, the one thing that I think I'll take away from him is he has shown a lot of maturity throughout this. Now, of course, there was some quotes this off season who said he probably wanted to be moved, and I will say this though, he is still a young player, and I know that you've talked about this a lot, and I've seen a lot of it on Twitter because it is sort of the Twitter thing with Sabres right now is Rasmus Ristolainen and sort of the narrative around him that exists, and that one of those narratives is the sixth different coach who now says they think that they can put him in a position to succeed. Like, are you buying it? And just where are we, you know, 5 days, 4 days into training camp? And is he a player that ends up on the game day roster come week one?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, one of the things we just actually had a presentation on earlier is the age distribution and age curve. And he's at a point in his career now where players at his age are kind of hitting their peak. So there's not really a lot of growth there in terms of age. He kind of is who he is right now. And, you know, in terms of him building more value, it depends. Because I think around the league, his numbers are going to dip, and not because he's going to play poorly. It's because his minutes are probably going to go down, and he's not going to get those power play minutes. They're going to go to Dahlin. So his production numbers are going to go down. Now, does that mean his defense can't get better? Sure, but if a team looks at that production and then knows the player himself is not that great defensively, I don't know how you build more value there in a trade. I think your value kind of is what it is right now, and for a player of his age, that kind of is who he is. But, you know, I give him credit. You know, I watched him a lot yesterday in practice. He interacted with the teammates. He was laughing, so it wasn't like he was by himself in a bad mood. He was vocal on the ice. You can hear him times talking to his partner or calling for the puck or yelling that he's open. So, you know, I give him credit. As much as I kind of harp on Ristolainen for his shortcomings, you know, I think he's kind of coming here with the best attitude that he can. He doesn't look like he's causing any issues, at least from my eye on the ice. So, you know, it's a tough spot for him too. You know, it's not only for the team, but for him. It's tough to come here when maybe he really didn't want to be here, and he kind of has to be, and then he kind of has to make it work and learn a new system and a new coach. So it's kind of a lot on his plate, but you know, we'll kind of see. I think at this point, I think the odds probably favor him being in the opening night roster, but you never know. Things can kind of happen quickly.
Things can happen quickly, as we know here in Buffalo. Last thing, Chad, before I let you go for the day. Earlier this week, Jack Eichel made really interesting comments about being an elite scorer and wanting to become an elite scorer. I think we know he does have an elite shot. It's just what do I want to say about his elite shot? It's the consistency in which he puts that shot on net that has really been, early on his career, probably the thing that holds him back from being an elite scorer. I think we all know he has the ability, but does he have the supporting cast that allows him to be an elite scorer in the NHL, which I think we really probably have to put a numerical order to that, saying that threshold's probably about 40 goals, right? If you're an elite scorer, you're scoring a minimum of 40 goals.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm going to take a different angle to it, because I honestly, personally, I don't need him to be that player. I don't need him to be an elite goal scorer. I need him to go be Jack Eichel, the same player he was last year. And the reason I say that is because of who he's probably going to play with. Even though he wasn't with Skinner now, I mean, during the season, he's probably going to play with him. And I think it was Mike Kelly recently put out something where Jeff Skinner had the most rebound goals, something like that, in the NHL last season. Well, the reason is because he plays with Jack Eichel, and Jack Eichel is the type of shooter where he more shoots for rebounds. So when you have an elite finisher like Jeff Skinner with you, his shot is so quick and so, you know, heavy that it creates rebounds with the goaltenders. And then now you have a finisher like Skinner who clean that up. And then if you're going to put Jimmy Vesey with that, well, look at that. Jimmy Vesey's skill set is finishing around the net. So if you have those two finishers around the net, and you have Eichel who creates shots, while his shooting percentage will be low, and maybe he has the ability to score 40 goals, I would rather take a 30-goal, 80-assist season than, you know, a 40-40, right? So, I mean, I don't need him to change his approach, to be honest, and we'll see if he actually does that. But I think the way he played last season, especially when he was healthy before he had that injury in the middle of the season, you know, he was really doing that, where his shooting percentage was lower, but he was generating so much offense and generating so many scoring chances with his shot.
But I do think there is a point in there, too, Chad, where I think just being Jack Eichel is likely a 30-goal scorer if that shooting percentage can just raise to a level that isn't as low as it's been the last 2 years, right? Like, if he just raises that a few percentage points, we're talking about a 30-goal scorer anyways, you know? So, like, I think you're totally spot on that Jack Eichel just be Jack Eichel, but I do think that that player is a 30-goal scorer at his peak.
Right, yeah. I mean, his shooting percentage has been pretty much the same throughout his entire career.
Sure,
so that's
yeah.
kind of what you're going to get, right? So, I mean, if he wants to maybe take a different approach to the game, maybe he wants to focus more on scoring. If he actually does that, then maybe it goes up. Because like we said, he has the shot, he has the potential to do it. But, you know, we just seen through his career, you know, that 8-9 shooting percentage, I think is kind of what to expect from him. And I think his shot can do so more besides just putting the puck in the net. Because it can allow somebody else to puck the net or create more chances on the power play or at even strength.
All right, my friend. Thank you very much for joining me. Enjoy your big nerd fest this weekend. And we will be talking again on Sports Talk Saturday as the season inches closer. So thanks for your time, my friend. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll be talking soon.
All right, man. Thanks.
Yep, Chad Dinamis is there of Die by the Blade on the West Her Hotline. I got to go to break, take a quick timeout because Joe Moreno, this is a full schedule today, guys, so stick with me. We got another great guest here from Lockdown Bills and from the Draft Network, Joe Moreno, coming up here next on Sports Talk Saturday on WGR.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
He executed, identified the coverage or the pressure, and then he got the ball out on time, and he spread the ball around to a variety of different receivers, backs, tight ends, so that was good to see as well.
It's Bills head coach Sean McDermott, Nate Geary here, Sports Talk Saturday, continuing on this morning, switching over to some football, going back to the West Her Hotline, because Joe Moreno joins me here on the West Her Hotline. Joe is from the Draft Network. You can also listen to his podcast over at Locked On Bills. Joe, good morning. Thanks for joining me, man. Before we even really hop into the Bills, I was interested in talking to you about this first. And yesterday, one of my favorite players of all time made some interesting remarks yesterday on ESPN First Take, and of course, is Tim Tebow talking about a very controversial topic amongst not only the sports media currently in the last few weeks, but now that the college football season's in full swing, I assume this conversation won't be going anywhere soon. But Tim Tebow coming out and basically slamming people for even having the idea that college athletes, not just college football players, just college athletes in general, should be able to profit off their likeness. I'm interested maybe first in your reaction to his thoughts, his opinions on that, and maybe where you stand on the topic.
Yeah, it's good. Thanks for having me on, Nate. It's interesting that Tim Tebow came out and made those comments yesterday, and I know there's a lot of challenges with this conversation, you know, whether it's just something as simple as Tua Tagovailoa being able to go and sign some autographs at Dick's Sporting Goods, or if we're talking about actually paying players, which is really challenging, I think, when you consider all of the teams across the nation, not just the Georgias and Clemsons and Alabamas and Notre Dames. But, you know, I thought this was a short-sighted opinion by Tim Tebow, who had some different circumstances in his life growing up that kind of led to his ability to play at the University of Florida, and a very affluent background. That's not the case for a lot of the players, most of the players. And so I feel like he was pretty ignorant towards a lot of other circumstances that other people face. And, you know, it's anti-American, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we have the opportunity to make money. I mean, I get to talk about football, and because I can do that, I get to make money because of it. And I wouldn't like anyone to say I couldn't do that. And so, look, there's a lot of layers to this conversation, but I think Tim Tebow overall was very short-sighted.
Yeah, one of the things, Joe, and that I think is maybe the biggest issue about this problem, is the nuance that it takes to talk about it with any level of understanding. And I think Tim Tebow wanted to go on television and say, because I was this big-time college quarterback, I'm the one who has the smartest reaction to this. And the problem is just not every situation is the same. And your point about Tim Tebow and his upbringing is a little bit lacking in the self-awareness standpoint in that arena, only because there are so many other guys that come up that aren't given the opportunities that a Tim Tebow are given. And for anyone who has the opportunity to make some money, because we know these universities, these colleges are making millions and millions of dollars off of these players. And if a, you know, Marshawn Lattimore just absolutely destroys his knee and can never play in the NFL, who had a bright future, you know, like, there are some avenues now where with insurance companies and everything else, but the idea that college athletes shouldn't be paid strictly because it's not in the heart of the game, right? Like that Tim Tebow was kind of referring to, like, that's mm-hmm. just, that's what makes college football so great. And I guess it's just a really innocent not really like awareness type of take that you're taking on college football. I don't know. I really disagree with Tim, and I think it's too bad that he didn't have the broader picture in mind when he was talking, because a lot of people look up to him, and that wasn't the best way to represent, I think, the situation at hand for sure.
Yeah, no question about it. It's funny, I actually wrote an article yesterday for thedraftnetwork.com about Chaz Surratt, who's a former quarterback and out linebacker at the University of North Carolina. He was part of 13 players last year that were suspended for a number of games because they sold team-issued sneakers. You know, I mean, that we're not even talking about salaries. We're talking about stuff like that.
And that's the unfortunate part about it, right? And not only that, you look around, like Terrell Pryor, right? His career, his college career was ruined because of tattoos and memorabilia. You know, like, it's just, to me, at points, the NCAA can be so short-sighted. And there's no consistency at that level. And a lot, like people say, and Tim Tebow mentioned this, is that's why people like college football more than the NFL. But in my opinion, Joe, they are much of the same in terms of their consistency and their pitfalls and their downfalls. Mm-hmm. The NCAA and NFL, although very different, they are the same in which they stink. You know, like, the reasons that both of them suck, they really crossover big time.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And I do think it's interesting, certainly a discussion for another day, is why people specifically do like the NFL or NCAA better. It's interesting, but yeah, these are complicated issues, and you know, it's some of it seems easy to solve, some of it less easy, but I think people should be able to profit off of their unique skill sets. Yes.
Joe, let's talk a little bit about this Bills defense. And this week, they're going to go up against an incredibly shorthanded Giants offense. And I shouldn't say that just because their top receiver went down, because even with their top receiver, Joe, they are an incredibly limited team offensively in terms of talent. Other than the offensive line, that offensive line has been remade. It's young, it's big, it's mean. Talk a little bit about that Giants offensive line and what that Bills defensive line, what kind of matchup they're looking for this week.
Well, Dave Gettleman likes his hog mollies, and he went out and assembled a pretty good group of them, right? I mean, starting with Nate Solder, a left tackle that they plucked from New England, gave him a ton of money. He had a good year last year. Their guard duo is maybe the best in football, and Will Hernandez, a second-year player out of UTEP. And then at right guard, they have Kevin Zeitler, who's one of the better guards in the game. They got him over from from Cleveland. And those guys are really good. And that complements a really dynamic running back in Saquon Barkley. And there's their ability to create space, but not only create space up front, but get out in the boundary and block, hit blocks off tackle, hit blocks on the second level. They're very solid. John Jalapio is a starting caliber guard. And then kind of the weak link is the right tackle, Mike Remmers. If you look at this thing and say, here, there's an opportunity for us to win some one-on-one battles because our player is going to be better than theirs, the Bills have to be looking at, you know, Shaq Lawson, maybe getting Jerry Hughes over on the left side, Trent Murphy, Darrell Johnson, as the real chance to create some problems there for that Giants offensive line. Now, this group performed very well last week, right? Dak really wasn't pressured. They ran the ball very effectively, although they didn't do it very much. And they do some things to help Eli. They'll move him a little bit more than you expect for a quarterback like Eli Manning. And so, you know, it's not just a matter of kind of sitting duck in the pocket. They're creative in how they keep they complement their good pass blockers with some pocket movement and things like that.
Yeah, with the level of essentially, you look at the Giants offense right now and you look at it and you're thinking, okay, I stopped Saquon Barkley, I can likely stop this offense. The problem is, Joe, is the Giants defense right now has struggled. They struggled big time in week one against a really good Dallas offense and a good Dallas passing attack. But I think the one thing that you looked at, and you mentioned it in your first response there, is Saquon Barkley in limited touches. And I think that's going to be the problem. And it's one of the major issues and reasons why I stayed away from a Saquon Barkley first overall in my fantasy drafts, because I had a couple first overall picks, and I went with Christian McCaffrey, because although there's no denying that Saquon Barkley, if he's not the best running back in football, it's hard to make an argument he's any less than number two. And the only issue that I saw was, okay, every defensive coordinator in football says, okay, I'm going to put eight in the box, let's have Eli Manning beat us over the top. Like, I'm going to stop your best asset and make your 30-some-odd year-old quarterback, who clearly does not have the same arm strength outside the hashes and outside the numbers than he once did. Like, how can the Giants rely on Saquon Barkley if they're going to be down by two touchdowns at the 7-minute mark in the first quarter every week?
Well, the big challenge for the Bills with Saquon Barkley, who's definitely the most dynamic running back in football, is they got to tackle him, right? The Bills' defense missed 13 tackles last week against the New York Jets, and Matt Milano was guilty of some of those, Saran Neal, Levi Wallace. And so those guys have to play a bigger role this week in terms of making tackles when they're available, but also getting to the football. Not so many solo tackles. It's going to take multiple people to get Saquon down, and there's no time to not be urgent in this football game. So it's about rallying to the football and being secure with your ability to bring him down. And you know, this is a Giants offense that last week against Dallas was 90% in three-plus wide receiver sets, right? They're without their top three guys in Golden Tate, Sterling Shepard, and Corey Coleman, who was one of the top three guys who's also out for the year. Cody Latimer's out for this game. This is a team that is really designed to run three wide, right? Now, they got all these slot-type receivers, but in this West Coast style of offense that they run, that's kind of okay. And so this is going to go back to Saquon. They're going to feed him a ton. They're going to get Evan Engram involved, who had over 100 yards last week against Dallas. He's big, and he runs 4-4. And so it's a Saquon thing, and it's an Evan Engram thing. But if you can really laser on those players, and you feel good about the Bills' ability to win on the perimeter with their corners versus this undermanned Giants receiving corps.
Joe Marino here on the Wester Hotline. Joe, what do you say to Bills fans who are sort of already circling this as a victory? And I think their week one matchup, the Bills, they certainly, from a statistical standpoint, yards gained. They controlled the football offensively other than, obviously, those four turnovers. So you look at this Giants team, and I think you're definitely seeing a team that is definitely a step back talent-wise. I mean, just look at the wide receivers, as you mentioned. A step back in terms of talent than the New York Jets are. So when you look at this Giants team and you look at the Bills don't have the Patriots next week. I think the following matchup against Cincinnati Bengals is one where you might worry about we might be looking ahead. I don't think that's an issue in this week. It could definitely be an issue next week, but what are you looking for in terms of game plan, but more important, readiness? How important is it for the Bills to show in this game that not only, hey, last week that 17-16 victory was sort of fluky, we should have scored more points. Like, to you, what's like the importance of putting a Giants team away and winning by like two scores this week?
Well, I think good football teams can stack wins, and the Bills have an opportunity here to start stacking them, right, with the 1-0 start. Your favorite on the road to go back to East Rutherford, New Jersey and win another football game. You come back home and face the Cincinnati Bengals. You got to be 3-0 going into that Patriots game. You got to really feel like that's an opportunity. And, you know, I think under different coaching staffs, Rex Ryan obviously shines. You get a little bit more nervous about the team not being focused and taking their, you know, respecting opponents and those types of things. But from the way Sean McDermott's built this locker room, the culture, the identity of his football team, really, really taking on the image of Sean McDermott, I get less concerned about their ability to be focused and ready for this game. And, you know, the other day, and I talked about this in my podcast a lot on Thursday, was just like, everyone's down on Eli Manning. If you go on social media, nobody has a good thing to say about him. But he's still a veteran in this league. He's passed for nearly 60,000 yards. He had 300 yards passing last week. And last year under pressure, when he wasn't pressured, he was still very efficient as a passer. He's seen all the defenses the NFL is ever going to run, right? Now, he's undermanned with his skill players around him. But Eli Manning's seen a lot of football. You can't just chalk this up to a win because Eli Manning's a quarterback. You have to take him seriously, and you have to affect him. And take advantage of these opportunities that the Bills have, both on the perimeter offensively and defensively, where I think the Bills have advantages in both departments.
All right, Joe, before I let you go, one of the things that I think I'll be watching for in this game is how the Bills employ a scheme to defend Evan Engram, who I do believe is going to be one of the league's best young tight ends. If he isn't already, I think the only thing holding him back is that teams can tee off against him and know that he's really their only weapon offensively through the passing game. So, Evan Engram, how do the Bills attempt to cover him? Who do they deploy? Will it be a kind of a team approach where the scheme is going to take care of it? Or do you believe that a matchup of like Saran Neal or like Matt Milano up against Evan Engram is the way that the Bills will try to defend him this week?
Well, the Bills historically have done a pretty good job against tight ends. And that's it being said, they haven't seen one with the physical gifts of an Evan Engram who's healthy right now. And that's pretty much the only thing that's been limiting him early in his career has been injuries, because when he's on the field, he's very productive. And so, you know, I do think it's going to be a scheme thing where the Bills do a very good job of limiting certain throws. But also, yeah, I think Saran Neal, that's a player that you look at. I remember being in Carolina for the joint practices with the Panthers and how many opportunities I saw Saran Neal going up against Greg Olsen and their other tight ends there, Ian Thomas and Chris Manhurts. you know, a lot of one-on-one opportunities in that capacity. And, you know, look, that's kind of where you bring Ciaran Neal. And even if Taron Johnson was healthy for this game, you still like that matchup because you have a guy that has some length and some physicality, some size about him to really match up and see if you can get him in some press situations, really disrupt some route timing. And so it's scheme, right? You've got great safeties in Hyde and Poyer that can really do a good job of limiting some of the opportunities down the field. But the underneath stuff is really going to come down to guys like Ciaran Neal to really jam and really go toe-to-toe with a really physically dynamic tight end.
Yeah, I'm excited for this matchup, Joe. It's definitely one, as you mentioned, this is a game that you need to win. Next week's a game you need to win. And as you mentioned, good teams, they stack wins. And I'll be looking a lot at how the Bills attack this defense early from an offensive standpoint. Not only that, but does the defense have a carryover from week one? There was a lot of energy. There was a lot of momentum that defense took from the end of last season into this season. And Joe, the defense last week looked dominant. And I'm really looking forward to how they try to defend this offense with how shorthanded they are and whether or not they overlook them a little. So I'm really looking forward to this matchup this week. You and I will be we'll be doing this again very soon as the season continues moving on. Thanks for joining me today, man. I do appreciate it. Thanks for making some time. I know you had a kind of a busy schedule today, so thanks for making some time for me, man.
Of course, Nate. Looking forward to the game. Thanks for having me.
Awesome, man. Joe Marino there of the Draft Network and Locked On Bills. You can check out his stuff on Twitter, of course. Let me get you Joe's handle. It is the Joe Marino on Twitter. And again, he is an analyst over at the Draft Network. And he also hosts the Locked On Bills podcast, which you should definitely check out if you haven't already. So when we come back, we will set up the second hour. We are already almost done with hour one here of Sports Talk Saturday. So we'll do that after a quick time out here on WGR.
And then you saw all the players they signed in free agency. I mean, you know, say what you want. They didn't sign big names. They didn't pay big money other than, say, paying the center. But they did come back, and they get a lot of guys to come in, and that's encouraging. So let's say they make the playoffs with a 9-win season. And again, maybe not being a 9-win team, but there may not be a 5th or 6th 9-win team for talent, performance, or anything else in this AFC. That's just the way I think it is. I see a repeat of 2017.
John Clayton there of he's not with ESPN anymore. It's just John Clayton. Is it ESPN Radio?
It's an ESPN affiliate out there in Seattle.
Yeah, I miss John Clayton on TV, though. Ma! Get the meatloaf! No, that was
that is the wrong reference.
Yeah. No, what did he say?
Mom, I'm doing my segment!
Yeah, that's it. Do they have an open for him? Do they play that? Is that like part of his open?
They play that for his open, yes.
Thank God. I haven't heard that open in a long time, so it's been a little while. Welcome, everybody. Sports Talk Saturday. Nate Geary here, finishing up hour one of Sports Talk Saturday. This next hour, the 12 o'clock hour, I got some savvy Bills beat reporters, some of the classic veterans of the industry. I got Sal Capaccio. He's going to join us at 12, and then 12:30, Mike Catalana. So a bunch of hot takes coming here. Well, I don't know. Sal's not really a hot take guy.
Bunch of nuanced, balanced
there it
takes.
Is. There it is. There it is. Fair and balanced. That's basically on. That's going to be on Sal's. I don't know. I was going to say gravestone, but it's
and
kind
Mike
of that's,
Catalana.
That's kind of dark. Yeah, but yeah, no, I agree. So we'll have Sal on here next segment. We're going to talk a little bit. I'm actually very interested. I had a really interesting thought last night when I texted Sal about coming on today, and I had a really interesting thing I wanted to talk to Sal about. It was. The differences that we saw in week one with Cole Beasley and John Brown and how their roles will continue evolving this season. So Sal and I, we're going to break down some of the Bills offense that we saw in week one and what we expect to see week two. Mike Catalana and I will talk a little Josh Allen. He wrote a piece this week about Josh Allen and his role on the offense, but more importantly, kind of his role as a leader and as the quarterback of this team. So a couple of interesting topics coming up this hour here on Sports Talk Saturday. So continue hanging around with us here. We're on until 2 o'clock here today on Sports Talk Saturday at WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.